together again, you and I chatting it up round the wireless Thursday style, March 6, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I played some remarks from the previous evening that came from a major state legislative leader concerning the ongoing controversy over transgender athletes competing against biological females in Connecticut. Yankee Institute for Public Policy President Carol Platt Lebo dropped by again, this time to talk about a new report detailing Connecticut state employee overtime pay and the alleged use of so-called overtime spiking. Only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi talked about possible charter revision in the Park City and, yes, more short tempers on the city council. And we welcome back former Time Magazine senior reporter and professor emeritus of political science at St. Peter's University, Alan Sanders, to chat about Tuesday night's presidential address and the future for National Democrats.
So amid all the confusion, all the screaming, all the yelling, all the finger pointing, not just in Washington, but even up at the Capitol and maybe, sadly, at your own city council or town council or RTM or Board of Selectmen or Select Persons or Board of Alders about the direction of the country and the blue people pointing to the red people and the red people pointing to the blue people. Sometimes there is just a striking lack of a phrase that I didn't make up, but a lot of people use quite well. There's a striking lack of an ability to read the room, of an ability to see the alternate argument on things. And I think I've become a better host marginally over the years, over the 33 years I've been doing this format, to sit back, to take a breath, and to understand what the other side is saying. Now, it doesn't mean I have to necessarily embrace it and agree with it, you know, full throttle. If I think something is wrong, I'm going to still think something is wrong. But especially over the last 10 years or so, and I've had people say, hey, your shows are better, you sound different. And I've told them what I've tried to do is remain genuine to what I think, but not brush aside what the other side may think. That's why I always say a lot of men can't understand what the right to an abortion means to a woman. They just can't. Doesn't mean you can't argue the issue. It doesn't mean you can't offer thoughts on it, just the way I have friends of mine who say, well, I could never envision owning a gun, but I guess I shouldn't poo-poo those who own guns. And I tell them, yes, you shouldn't, because you're not in their shoes. You didn't grow up with guns in the house, maybe in a different area of the country. And likewise, you know, you didn't have to perhaps experience the angst or the decision as to whether or not to terminate a pregnancy. All right, what are you talking about, Paul? Where are we getting here as we kick off the Thursday edition of the show? We have an ongoing debate in this country. Although the numbers may be small of who it affects, it's not a numbers debate. It's a debate of seeing the other side's argument in something and trying to come to some sort of reasonable accommodation that makes both sides okay, decently happy with someone or something, or some guidelines put out there. Hey, you know, speaking to Keith Richards, the song you played guitar on, one of the hundreds of songs, you can't always get what you want. And in legislating in hot button issues, more people need to realize this. And along with realizing it, you need to realize that both sides, in any argument and almost any social issue, especially social issues, maybe far more than monetary issues, because there's no different way to look at two and two, it always equals four. But on social issues, we have to take a look at the other side here. And there was a momentary debate, and somebody sent me the high sign on this. This wasn't surreptitiously recorded. This was on CTN. You know CTN, the Connecticut Network. We always joke about it with our Tuesday friend Megan Portfolio because she sits up and watches hours and hours of this stuff. And the great thing about CTN is they are the state version of C-SPAN. So you can actually see and hear your legislators. Now, coming up, I'm going to take a little break here. And coming up, I'm going to play you just, how long is this? This is about 2 minutes or so of a leading person in Hartford. And I'm not attacking him personally. I think I've met him once. It's Bob Duff from Norwalk. But his pushback on an amendment that was openly debated and broadcast statewide on C-SPAN last night, you probably didn't see it. His response to that is a perfect example of how one side is so dug in, there's not even a cursory attempt to say, hey, maybe there's another view of this. Like I was saying, a few things upset me more than when we get into a political discourse on the city or town level or on the state level or on the national level, and we don't even have the courtesy to understand and say, hey, I understand what the other side's argument is. Now, you cannot agree with the other side, whether it has to do with abortion, with taxes, with green initiatives, with guns, with media, whatever. I get it. Frankly, if the country agreed on everything 100% of the time, it'd be boring. But we have an issue now that's being hashed out on a national level and here in Connecticut. And when I hear some elected leaders talk about it and not even acknowledge the concerns of other people, it drives me crazy. And I'm talking about the issue of transgender athletes. I'm not here to pick on the athletes. I'm really not. But I am here to, again, roll my eyes at some of the stuff you hear when you have some people, and granted, it's not a lot of occurrences, I understand that, but when you have people openly say, hey, is it really fair? Two biological women and biological young ladies and women, college, high school age, whatever, teens, young women in college age, protected by Title IX, which is why Title IX was instituted, I think, in 1972 or 73, to ban gender discrimination here. And you try to bring this up, but the other side looks at you and wags a finger. And as they wag a finger to women, the women's groups, those, so, you know, now, and all these women's groups, they stay silent because they're all phonies. And if you're a member, if you're listening to me out there and you belong to a so-called women's group, you are giving your attention and your money to a phony group. Because do you notice there is never any defense of young girls, young ladies, high school age women, whatever, who, or college age women who don't want to compete against transgender athletes. And we always hear about the plight of transgender athletes, and that's fine. They want to compete, I get it. But explain to me, why is this so one-sided? And you have one party, you have the Democratic Party, that's gnashing their teeth about, oh my God, by our studies, that Trump ad with transgender athletes, it was the most effective ad there was. Well, why do you think, Clyde, it was so effective? Because even people who are liberal, who believe in women's rights, say, no, this is wrong. Let me give you this piece of audio before we go to news here and traffic and weather together. Norwalk State Senator Bob Duff, the state Senate Democratic leader, last night, maybe while you and I were relaxing with dinner, I don't know what time this was actually, there was a debate yesterday or last night in the state Senate regarding a special ed bill. Now, this amendment, it was Amendment B to this bill, and you can look it up. I'll give you the bill number in a moment. The amendment was to bar transgender athletes from participating against biological women in sports in Connecticut. Now, of course it went down in flames. It's a blue state. It's going to go down in flames. But the reason you introduce amendments like this is to get the other side on the record and to see if the other side might give your concern at least a little credence, at least a little bit of, okay, I understand what you're saying, but. So Bob Duff, the state Senate Democratic leader, as is his priority, listen, he can do this. There's nothing personal against Senator Duff at all. It's just that whenever this issue was brought up, there seems to be, from the Democratic Party, a tin ear on this. They just don't get why this resonates with people. And they'll throw the argument, well, it's not all that many people. It doesn't matter. It resonates with people. At least a lot of those people have daughters, granddaughters, nieces, whatever. And for whatever reason, they don't want their young female relatives to have to run against biological boys. They just don't want it. And yet Connecticut doesn't do anything that other states do to at least appease both sides. It is mind-numbing here. I'm going to play this for you. We'll go to news and traffic and weather together. This is one of the Democratic leadership's main guys, Bob Duff here, standing up to basically, I don't know, you give it a listen. What do you think this is? Is he saying you people are just, you are all uncaring fools because you're all tied up about this transgender thing?
I believe that this amendment and what is happening is that it is a small group of people who are being picked on by a larger group of people. And that shouldn't happen. We are here in this chamber to protect and speak up for those who are voiceless, who don't have the same pulpit that we do. And I think that we should keep that in mind. I mean, again, we're talking about 1% of people who participate in sports, or 1% of the population who may identify as transgender. That's not hardly a lot of people. And frankly, I don't know that there are a lot of transgender athletes who decide to be trans because they want to play sports. It's for a whole nother reason. And so, Madam President, I just have a real issue with that. And the fact that we've just been discussing about special ed funding, and that we're talking about funding, whether it's $92 million or $40 million, and yet here we are saying how important this is, and yet we're still standing here ready to turn our back on that by offering this amendment and thinking that if it passes, it then has to go back to the House of an uncertain future, and then we don't know what's again going to happen to this funding. So I just think that, again, this is going after a small group of people who are vulnerable, and it is an attack on them. It's an attack on them who don't deserve it. They have never deserved it. They didn't ask for it. And I believe it is our job to push forward equal rights. It is our job to push forward on equity. It is our job to push forward on speaking for those who can't speak for themselves.
Now, not once in what you heard from Bob Duff, or do you ever hear from the Democratic majority in this state, do you ever hear them say anything to the effect of, look, I understand this is emotional, and I understand the young women, the young high school girls may have a problem with this. There is literally, at least on a public stage, less than zero recognition that this may bother people. It's all, oh, you're attacking people. We're defending people. What about the rights? And look, you may not like it, but you have to ask yourselves this question. And I'd like your answer on this. Text or voice at 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Simple question. What about the rights or the concerns of a biological young girl, high school or middle school age girl, or a young woman in college who simply says, Senator, with all due respect, what about my rights? What about the rights? I'm not attacking anybody, Senator. Why don't the Democrats ever, even on a national scale, they got hammered on this issue in the election. Yet you never hear them say, at least. You think they'd pay lip service here and say, well, we understand it's an emotional issue, and we understand the other side has concerns. Why do you never hear them say, at minimum, that? Overtime spiking. Interesting. Of course, we hear the word overtime and we say, well, if I'm getting the OT, must be pretty good. What is overtime spiking? New report out there to talk about it. The president of the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, a frequent guest here at the radio station, Carol Platt-Lebo. Hey, Carol, it's Paul. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. Great to be with you.
Overtime spiking. You know, I saw this before I read it, and I went, let me guess. And I was pretty much on spot with this. But Carol, talk to us about this new report here and why you think taxpayers may want to be concerned about this.
Well, this new report written by Red Jahnke, whom we all know, that Yankee Institute has published, is talking about the fact that it looks like we have an abuse problem in our state government. $376 million in overtime pay has been paid out across six state agencies in 2024. Now, what happens is that to boost their pension benefits, employees who are getting ready to retire work a lot of overtime. And this phenomenon is referred to as overtime spiking. And this is because, as we all know, your pension is based on your wages. And
sure.
Those wages include overtime pay.
Yeah.
You know, this is a problem.
Yeah, and Carol, I have always been fascinated that you and other people constantly point out now, I'm not a business expert. I'm not a public sector employee expert. But every year we seem to have 300 and change, upward near 400 million, 200 million. Is the amount of overtime here in the state? I mean, does anybody ever try to fix this? Or is this just, well, yeah, whatever. It is what it is, and it's unavoidable. Because that figure you just gave for last year, you know, which was almost $380 million, Carol, you know, maybe the common person hears that and says, really? Is that bad planning, or what is that?
Well, it's you know, our problem is that our government unions are the state's number one special interest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not like death and taxes. It's not inevitable. It's a result of the choices that are made by our state's top elected officials. And it has to do with, for example, the contracts that are negotiated with what's called CBAC, that is the bargaining coalition of the government unions.
Mm-hmm.
And those government unions are gearing up to negotiate their contracts, which expire in 2027. And, you know, in 2017, CBAC agreed to a freeze in state employee wages, changes to pension calculations, and little tweaks to employee health care benefits. In return, supposedly, the state was going to save $24 billion over the next two decades. But the unions made out far better than they let on and far better than taxpayers did. And the savings, quote unquote, have fallen short by tens of millions of dollars. And in the meantime, CBAC members, that is government unions, have secured a four-year no-layoff guarantee, cash bonuses, guaranteed pay raises in the last 2 years of the contract, and an extension of their already crazy generous health and retirement benefits through 2027. You know, as we're seeing a lot on the federal level, Paul, this is not the way people in the private sector live.
And also, I see here, Carol, in this report that there's a wonder as to why these costs are going crazy, because you folks point out that a lot of senior level employees, and I remember this, they actually retired in the fiscal year 2024, about two fiscal years ago, and they were replaced by, you know, new or lower tiered employees. So that's got to make people's eyebrows raise as well.
Right. I mean, the report does highlight the fact that the overall wage costs should not have risen by one third.
Yeah.
That's because a lot of these senior employees, and those are the people who should be earning the most, retired in fiscal year 2022. And so, you know, that makes you wonder exactly what's going on. And, you know, back in 2020, Paul, Governor Lamont hired the Boston Consulting Group to study the state agencies.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Remember that? And you know what they found? They found widespread absenteeism, which is a polite way to say people not showing up. Back then, overtime pay was at $299 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grown by nearly $100 million today. And so, you know, someone needs to be taking this stuff seriously. It's not fair to taxpayers. Our report shows that the Department of Corrections is especially bad. More than 5,000 of the 7,000 employees work overtime and earn more than $110 million in overtime pay they did in 2024. This isn't the way to run a lemonade stand, much less a state.
Yeah, and I mean, Carol, listen, I have a side hustle on the weekend where, you know, occasionally I get paid overtime hours. I'm not besmirching anybody. But again, my bosses there have told me, and any other jobs, yeah, we build in a little bit of overtime because we know we're going to, you know, just stuff happens during the year. But these numbers, as you say, these are just outright excessive. And what's the impetus, Carol, to fix all this? Rhetorical question, right?
Right. Well, that's the problem, because when you have the government unions, which are the state's dominant special interest, when they have really special rules for how they can participate in statewide elections, and they help elect the people that they quote unquote negotiate with. It sets up a dynamic that's very, very troubling. It's part of the reason why Franklin Roosevelt didn't even believe there should be government unions. Because the question was, who exactly is their bargaining adversary? It's the taxpayers. That's wrong right there.
Absolutely. Carol Platt-Lebo. Carol, thanks. YankeeInstitute.org. YankeeInstitute.org. Read the report, folks, and there's links to it, and there's actual numbers that are going to make you gasp, especially if you're a business owner. Overtime spiking in Connecticut. Carol, thank you. We appreciate it. Be safe. Take care, okay?
Thanks, Paul, and you can find us on social media as well at Yankee Institute.
All right, thanks, Carol. Be good. But right now, with no further ado, Lenny Grimaldi is the guy. The website's only at bridgeportlaw.com. Lenny? How are you, sir?
Uncle Paulie, all kinds of fighting going on.
Yeah.
In Washington and Connecticut and Bridgeport. Bridgeport, the city that never disappoints its politics. Right?
You never waved a cane at your former boss, did you, like Al Green did the other night? You didn't go that route, did you?
No. I once had a baseball bat in his office, but he was kicking me a ball.
Did he really?
He took the bucket back to me.
Okay.
Like, he wanted to play Pepper. So here's a ball. Let's play Pepper.
Nice. Ball. Very good. Yeah. All right. Now, Lenny, you've had two stories here. A war of words. And I watched part of that video you posted. I mean, so for people who look at Bridgeport, Lenny Grimaldi, from afar, what's going on with Bridgeport Generation Now and the city council? Learn us something here, please.
Yeah, so today we had kind of this perfunctory court appearance. Five Bridgeport politicians charged with election fraud. They went into court, and, you know, the court extended the hearing, and this is going to play out for a while. Now you have this the backdrop of this is you have Bridgeport Generation now, which has been involved in city elections for a number of years, a community group. They don't like a lot of city politicians, and the feeling is mutual. They don't like them either. They throw grenades, bombs back and forth, verbal messages. It just goes back and forth. And so Monday night city council meeting, the leaders of Gen Now, Kelly Hellman and Jameen Davis, they took to the podium during public speaking sessions and started ripping into the city council, right, collectively.
Saying,
this is a big old cover-up, corruption this, corruption that. And city council members say, hey, tit for tat, you're no Girl Scouts either, right? What about your background? What about your history? And so it got pretty unruly, got pretty wild. You go to OIB, you could just grab your favorite adult beverage, bring that bag of popcorn, and just have a really good time. What else is there to do? It got so unruly in there that the cops had to come in and restore order. So what's happened in Bridgeport council meetings lately is that during my time covering City Hall, during the public speaking session of the council meeting, council members never weighed in. Public came in.
Yeah.
What's happening now, consistently now, we're having council members getting up from their seats, walking out front, facing their peers, and addressing them, right? And so they only allow 10, public speakers.
Yeah.
I think it's like 3 minutes apiece, something like that, for 30 minutes at the session. But you actually have five council members Monday night participate in the public speaking session. And it was just going back. It's great TV.
Oh, I watched it and I'm sitting there going, are you kidding me? Lenny, listen. And you can identify with this. One of my mother's favorite phrases when even into her elderly years, Lenny, she used to point to the TV as like a lot of Italian mothers would, and she'd say, guarda, in other words, look at tutti cavone. In other words, you heard that, didn't you? She would say, look at all these cavones. I mean, really, Lenny, come on, help us out here.
I got tutti pops.
They're all crazy, right?
They're all crazy. It's like it's the whole thing was just so unwinding rapidly that there's nothing to do but kind of laugh. They see people in their 40s and 50s and 60s tear each other up at the podium, and then the cops have to be called in. And this isn't going to end here. And this is going to be they're going to be throwing bombs at each other for months and months, because they've been at each other's throats for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And Jen now has been trying to plant a flag in Bridgeport to win races, and they have failed a lot. They haven't really won anything. They do have money behind them. Mm-hmm. They would be dangerous if they had a real good strategist behind them, directing campaigns and having a message and a strategy and a turnout. But they have really failed at galvanizing whatever anti-vote is. They haven't really won anything. But, maybe they'll have their day someday.
Yeah. I mean, Lenny, before we take a break, why don't they have a strategist? You're right. Money is only maybe half the situation. You got to have people telling you what to do. Or is this a situation where maybe some people have tried, and as you and I well know, you can only tell some people some things so many times when you have to walk away and say, well, if you're not going to listen to me, see you later. Is that the problem with them or not?
The leadership makes it all about them.
Okay.
It's not about anybody else. They control the candy store. They're in charge. It's all about them. We're smart and you're stupid. Right. That's the leadership of Gen Now. Now, if they would step back and say, hey, listen, let's take a look at what we're doing here and realize they're not going forward, and realize, there's a lot of cynicism in Bridgeport politics, period. Right.
Mm.
And rightly so. Some of the politicians in Bridgeport deserve the cynicism. They brought it out on themselves.
Sure.
But so it has Gen Now. It's really been, the pot calling the kettle black. you know, where they constantly throw bombs. You're corrupt. You're this, you know, and they've done a lot of dubious stuff themselves in how they run campaigns. And, you know, they accuse Bridgeport politicians of absentee ballot fraud. And what they have been the greatest distributor of absentee ballot applications in this city.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's kind of a hard message where when you're doing that, well, you know, it's like call unclean hands, right? That's the problem. And they just want to control everything, and they're very, very stubborn. But, I mean, they have money behind them. If they catch somebody who really knew what they were doing, could systematically pick apart in the political establishment, put up good candidates, then they would be, dangerous for sure.
Yeah, money's only half the problem. Lenny, our buddy, our pal, Chris Caruso, getting back into action, I guess, submitting some ideas regarding possible charter revision, Lenny. And I guess what? There's a meeting coming up this Monday night. How does that look?
So it's a 13-member charter revision panel. There hasn't been a thorough review of the city's charter, which is basically creating the rules and regulations of the city, in decades. 13 members, and they've decided before they really weigh in on their own, they want to hear from the public. So Monday, 6 p.m., City Council chambers will conduct a public hearing for community input. And then they're going to take that input, and then they're going to start shaping what they want to do. Now, Chris Caruso, glad he's back.
Yeah.
You know, came back from a very tough situation, but he's on the mend. So he sent to me some suggestions for charter changes that I put. And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in there. I mean, things like, how about minority party representation on the city council, just rather than one party rule, right? Let's sharpen the ethics commission, give them a staff, put some teeth into it. He would like to see elected land use boards. So the planning commission, zoning board of appeals, they're appointed bodies. And so he's saying, hey, let's elect those bodies, right? And so, you know, there's other people who are weighing in saying, hey, maybe we should reduce the size of the city council, or maybe we should pay the city council, or should the city council president run the meetings instead of the chief executive? The mayor runs the meetings of the city council. So there's a lot of these things that are going on right now, and we'll see what kind of ideas come up. But so there's a process in place where this is not a long time frame. So they have to make the Charter Revision Commission has to make recommendations to the city council by mid-June.
Yeah.
The council goes through them, makes suggestions, and then they settle on shaping questions. And the big question is, like, is it going to be one question that covers a lot of things? Or is there going to be a series of questions, you know, five or six things for the voters to decide, you know, on the November ballot? So it's effectively a referendum in November. So that's the thing. Ultimately, the city council will have to decide and fight off of what the questions were going to be and in what shape.
Okay, so Monday night, and folks can just go, right, Lenny, and sit in the back or stand in the back and watch. Is this open to the public?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. They want public input. That's what, you know, out of the box you're saying, before we start really weighing in and rolling up our sleeves, we want to know what the public has to say, because maybe we'll have a lot of good ideas that coming out of that.
Absolutely. Lenny, you you know who looks at your site. Did I see the New York Post picked up one of your stories here? And they must have gone, oh, we got to run this. What happened with that?
Yeah, I was like, brought it to my attention. Did you see it in the New York Post? I go, so I did this exclusive interview with Alfredo Castillo. He's one of the city council members who got charged.
Who, for some reason, is talking to the media. I'm sure his lawyer's happy with that.
I know. I mean, it was basically Castillo was saying, you know, to me, I'm following the orders of the Democratic Party. You know, they tell you to jump off a bridge, you got to jump, you know. And so the genesis of this is the state Republican leadership.
Yeah.
In Hartford, saw my interview with him and then sent a letter to U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi.
Dear Trump's God, please, please, Lenny, please.
Yes, absolutely. And so they basically ran you know, wrote this letter to Pam Bondi, the U.S. Attorney General.
Yeah.
And then the New York Post, you know, picked up on it and, you know, yeah, you know, what the heck? Hey, it's a job, Uncle Paul. What the heck?
Hey, can you imagine if Pam Bondi says, yeah, I want to look at this. Oh, my God, Lenny, if only for the entertainment. Can you imagine that?
I don't know if she's going to have the man and female power the way Trump's laying off people all over the country. Is there enough firepower to investigate? What about the IRS? What are they going to do?
Oh, my God. And were you hanging at the Westport Library with Keith Richards and Lisa Wexler and Melissa Sheketoff? Because they were there. Were you invited to the shindig or not?
Open to the meet. I did not go, but I picked up the feed on it.
Okay.
Right. So I was like, I for many years, I lived in Reading.
Yeah.
And so Keith Richards lived in Weston.
Uh-huh.
So on a couple of occasions, including the Richfield Playhouse, I ran into.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A couple times. Yes. Yeah. And because he's been in the community over 40 years.
Yeah. He's a townie, from what I understand. He just goes about his business there. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he does. He raised his kids there. Yeah. And so it was kind of a cool thing to do for those of us who, you know, listen to his music, you know, forever. But I mean, think about Keith that I really like. I mean, Keith looked 80 when he was 40. So he really hasn't aged in 40 years.
Well, he stopped smoking a couple of years ago. Did you read that? He finally quit smoking. And on the last tour, it's like, wow, he actually looks better and sounds better. So even Keith, he's going to survive a nuke. You and I both know that, Lenny. He's going to survive a nuke.
Yeah, just look at the crevices in his face. How can anything penetrate that?
All right, folks, the website for all of this, Keith Richards, the brawls at the city council meetings, what to do about charter revision, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, good to chat with you as always, and we'll chat next week, sir, okay?
Okay, see you next week. Thanks.
All right, there you go. And I wanted to have this gentleman on. I don't think we've spoken to him since Election Day or shortly after, one of our go-to guys for years here. Former Time Magazine senior reporter, current professor of emeritus in political science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey, Professor Alan Sanders joins us once again. Professor, how are you? It's been a while. Hope all is good.
All is well, and it's always a pleasure to be back with you, Paul. Hope all is well with you, too.
It is, Professor. Thank you. And boy, there's no shortage of stuff to talk about. I'm sure you watched with the eagerness and dissected what we saw Tuesday night and the position the Democrats are in now, Professor. So give us your general thoughts on where we stand right now.
Well, I think where we stand right now is that Donald Trump is pursuing his agenda, but he's realizing that there is growing opposition to that agenda. Certainly, we see that with the walk back that he's done on tariffs. Many corporations and quietly some of his Republican allies are telling him that this would be disastrous, as is the stock market, which continues to plunge even today. So I think he's seeing that maybe his vision of, controlling the nation's economy himself alone without the input of Congress or without the input of others may not be producing the results that he wants to see. As far as the speech on Tuesday, my guess is that many people simply tuned it out. That is to say, I didn't hear anything new there in terms of what he had promised, and I suspect many people, as I did myself, found it much too long and much too rambling. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it changed people's views about Donald Trump or his policies.
Where do you think, Professor, the Democrats go now? And it was something interesting I saw in Senator Slotkin's response to that. I think she used something like change doesn't have to be calamitous, or change doesn't have to be catastrophic, or something like that, where it sounds like they're kind of realizing what people want, but at the same time saying this is not the way to do it. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think personally, I thought it was a good speech in the sense that it tried to lay out a strategy. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it wasn't, you know, charismatic or eloquent in terms of high-soaring rhetoric. But what I saw in that speech was an attempt to reposition the Democratic Party in the middle of the American political spectrum. Yeah. And she said, in addition to what you've just said, Paul, a lot of stuff bearing on economics and the way people's lives will be adversely affected by some of Trump's various policies and cutbacks and tariffs and all of that. I think the strategy is slow to emerge because, of course, you have to sort of see what the political environment feels like. But I think many Democrats are coming to the conclusion that the way to go about this is not to just criticize Trump, although they should do that to indicate their opposition, but basically to lay out a Democratic agenda that says, look, this is about you, this is about your well-being, and this is what Democrats believe will improve your well-being, and this is how Trump's policies are actually hurting your well-being, rather than sort of play onto the cultural issues that divide the country. Now, Trump has tried to do that, and he's worked the cultural issues very effectively for himself. But at the end of the day, it's what I've often discussed with you, Paul. People really look at politics as, what have you done for me?
Yeah.
How am I doing? Are you hurting me or are you helping me? And I think Democrats are refocusing their efforts towards that sort of politics.
You talk about a cultural issue, Professor. It's Professor Alan Sanders with us here on Connecticut Today. This just broke about an hour or so ago, and this popped up during my show here. It's from The Hill, so it's from a credible source. I'll just give you this quick two-sentence paragraph. California Governor Gavin Newsom said he believes transgender athletes participating in girls and women's sports is, quote-unquote, deeply unfair, breaking with Democrats on an issue that's become one of the party's most politically fraught. Are they seeing the light on this, Professor? What do you think of this? Because I read this today and I said, okay, it's some backbencher. Then I saw Gavin Newsom's name and I said, oh boy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a very important development. That is to say, Democrats are realizing that they have to realign themselves towards the middle. So that may mean that, there's a whole bunch of difference between, transgenders playing sport and discriminating against transgenders the general society and the workforce and in housing and all those other things. So I think Democrats like Gavin Newsom will say, look, we don't believe in discrimination. But there are certain activities, certain places where you kind of have to evaluate on a case-by-case basis what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And I think what he's trying to do is, at least for him, and I suspect for many other Democrats, sports is a place where perhaps there is need for making a difference. Now, many people and many Democrats and many people out there will disagree with that, and everybody will make their case one way or the other. But I think he's sort of saying, look, got to get back to the middle, and let's concern ourselves with the issues that affect most Americans. And for most Americans, it's really the economic issues, not so much the culture war issues.
Yeah, and finally, Professor, on a spokesman or a spokesperson out there for the Democrats, you've obviously noticed that one of our U.S. senators here in Connecticut, Chris Murphy, he's really out there. He was hosting a stream, an opposition stream to the Trump speech the other night. He's on a lot of the Sunday shows, 51 years old, supposedly was on the short list to be Secretary of State, had Kamala Harris run. You've obviously seen him. What do you think of Senator Murphy is? And does he represent in any way the future of the party, you think?
I think so, or at least I think he sees himself as representing the future of the Democratic Party. He's a moderate. He's liberal, but basically he's a moderate on most issues. And what he's observing is basically a vacuum of leadership in the Democratic Party because Democrats are trying to figure out what's the best approach. So he's figured out, according to his assessment, that the best approach is to be out there highly critical of Trump and to point out the areas where he believes that Trump policies are actually hurting middle-class Americans in ways that they didn't expect to happen. So he's taking the initiative, and that's what, ambitious politicians, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, all politicians are ambitious, but successfully ambitious politicians take stock of what's around them. If they see a void, they jump in and try to use that void in ways that can generate enthusiasm for their views and their politics. And so I think we all should take a look at him as a potential presidential contender.
Hey, and finally, Professor, I just popped into my head for what you said, ambition. I got to ask you this, not too far from us here in Fairfield County. What do you think of Andrew Cuomo's foray back into, now he wants to be mayor of New York City. Is he seeing a vacuum, the former governor there, Professor? What do you think?
Yes, he is. Now, of course, he's got a lot of scandals that attach to him, and so a lot of people will find him objectionable.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, putting that aside, though that's a hard thing to put aside, but if one can put that aside for a moment, he sees himself as a moderate, and many others see him as a moderate, again, in a field of quite of progressives, many of whom are unpalatable to many to many voters in New York City. So what you've got is you've got a scandal-ridden middle-of-the-roader, so to speak, against a bunch of progressives who are also unpalatable because of their politics. And so you've got a mess. It's just the way New York politics often is.
but guys like you and I, we love it, right? Because it's what we talk about all day.
Right.
Hey, thanks. Former Time Magazine senior reporter and professor emeritus of poli-sci at St. Peter's in Jersey City, Professor Alan Sanders. Professor, good to speak with you, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the line sooner than later. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care.
Appreciate it. Take care. Yeah, there you go.